The coronavirus, with the somewhat sinister name of COVID-19, is now the lead story. Travel and commerce have been interrupted worldwide. The first cases outside China are showing up in Europe and especially now in the United States. Will the coronavirus sink the Trump presidency? In podcast 907, the Bob Davis Podcasts. Well, we're going to be talking about coronavirus, and if you have coronavirus and you're, quarantined in your home, well, then you want to make sure your heat works. And when it comes to keeping your heating systems working, when it comes to keeping all this stuff functioning properly, when you have plumbing or heating problems, you want reliable service. And of course, I've said for years, that means Ryan Plumbing and Heating in St. Paul. You call 651-224-4771 in Minneapolis, 612-927-6488. They go back four generations in Frogtown. What does Ryan do? Quality replacement and repair of all plumbing, heating, and air conditioning systems. You know, my whole line these days is that people think they can fix this stuff themselves. And sometimes I suppose you could, but the reality is these systems are very complicated these days, and you have to have people that know what they're doing and why. So if you're talking about replacing a toilet, if you are looking at a new control system for your furnace system, or you got heating problems or pipes or whatever, you have to have somebody that knows what they're doing, and that is what Ryan is. For home or business, when it comes to keeping your systems running right, you have to have someone who knows what they're doing. When you have plumbing or heating problems, you want reliable service. Again, 651-224-4771 in St. Paul, in Minneapolis, 612-927-6488, metro-wide from St. Paul, Ryan Plumbing and Heating at ryanplumbing.com. Now, we are going to talk about manufacturing. We're going to talk about the economy in this podcast. And of course, in the news these days with coronavirus and with other issues, there's talk of bringing manufacturing back to the U.S. If this is you, if you're considering American manufacturing, I recommend DepoStar. They do American engineering and manufacturing. Visit them online at depostar.com. So this is not a podcast about the details of coronavirus. I am not a doctor or a disease specialist. I think everybody who listens to my podcast knows that. This is not going to be a detailed account of the latest cases. It's not going to be a podcast where we talk about the measures instituted to deal with the virus in detail and so on. If you want that, do your research. But if you want to know how important this issue is, remember this provoked a most recent and unusual press conference with the president and the vice president.
I've just received another briefing from a great group of talented people on the virus that is going around to various parts of the world. We have, through some very good early decisions that were actually ridiculed at the beginning, we closed up our borders to flights coming in from certain areas that were hit by the coronavirus and hit pretty hard. And we did it very early. A lot of people thought we shouldn't have done it that early, and we did, and it turned out to be a very good thing. And the number one priority from our standpoint is the health and safety of the American people, and that's the way I viewed it when I made that decision. Because of all we've done, the risk to the American people remains very low.
So this is a podcast about the knock-on effects economically and therefore politically to the election in the United States in 2020, both for president and for the potential U.S. Senate and House elections. And the key word here is potential. I don't like predicting the future. You know that. So I'm just going to tell you at the outset that some of this is speculation, but some of it's also just based on human nature, and it's something to watch out for. So we're going to talk about all that in this podcast. And it really applies to the political landscape, the changing political battleground for the presidential vote in 2020, and by extension, as I said, the potential for changes in the U.S. Senate and House. This is not a doomsday scenario. It's not a conspiracy theory update. I'm not going to tell you what causes COVID-19 or any of that stuff. These days, when you talk about potential based on current information politically, people get emotional. And what happens, and I've had lots and lots of conversations like this, people get really emotional and they want to pin you down. They think you're arguing against or for something. They want to put you in a box if you're saying, hey, what about this? They think you're this or that, because that's how we operate these days. What tribe do you belong to? What are you actually saying? This podcast is meant for food for thought more than anything, and it has more to do with the U.S. economy than anything else. And I'm not putting this up because of recent stock market gyrations, although they're significant as related to COVID-19, due to worldwide reactions to the virus in China first, then South Korea and Iran, and most recently here in the United States. And of course, with the press conference held by the president and vice president and reaction to this and what our reactions to the virus might be officially, and what many health officials and experts have described as a potential or real pandemic. And I think clearly the press conference shows that the president has the same kind of information, looking forward to quote-unquote pandemic. It is reported that Trump is very concerned about this issue. So that's kind of the basis for this podcast. One of the things I've been doing, and I haven't been doing it officially because I think it's too soon, but one of the things that I've been doing is looking at these statewide polls currently in terms of matchups between the president and potential Democratic nominees. They're highly problematic because the Democrats haven't settled on a nominee yet, so people really can't compare the Democrat alternative to the president. But I've been looking closely into these statewide polls in the battleground states, and so one of the things that I have seen is that the number one issue is either the economy or healthcare, and by extension, what that means is health insurance. One of the main reasons Donald Trump was elected president in 2020 is the economy. Certainly in Ohio, economy was the number one reason. And in 2014 and 2016, one of the main reasons for Republican majorities in the House and Senate was their promises to repeal the Obama-era Affordable Health Care Act, as well as the president's promises to repeal the Affordable Care Act of whatever it was. And so the second issue in many states in 2020 is what they call health care in politics, which again is really about health insurance. So the coronavirus, which is basically the common cold, and COVID-19 as a variant of coronavirus, intersects two huge issues for this election: economics and health care. All of the local statewide polls show that economy and healthcare is a static issue, and I'll talk a little bit more about that later in the podcast, but I'm leaving healthcare out of this podcast because health insurance and healthcare are going to be impacted, but I think everybody knows and understands and is almost willing to forgive the fact that this might end up being a temporary emergency or whatever. So for me to make judgments based on the health insurance issue is probably not fair to the president, and I'm not going to do it until it actually becomes a real issue. In other words, if there is a problem that causes the healthcare system to choke, or if the president mishandles it, then it becomes a political issue. My focus is really on the economics of this thing and the potential for the economic impacts of this virus to trigger a recession, and what a recession would mean for the presidency of Donald Trump and his reelection possibilities. And that's really the question. It's something that people don't want to deal with. And it's also something that, again, when you bring it up, the immediate reaction is, oh, you must be against Trump. Again, I don't care one way or the other who wins the presidency. And I'll talk a little bit more about that as well. So last year, the United States GDP, which has now been revised twice, at least the fourth quarter, has now gone through a second revision. It will go through three or four revisions before the final numbers come in because data keeps coming in. But it was 2.1% for the final quarter, and I think something like 2.3% overall for the economic growth for the year. Technically, any economic growth is referred to as a boom, but what we have in the United States, economically speaking, is hardly a boom in the way that we have traditionally and socially understood what a boom is. We have growth at slightly above or below the 2% mark. And growth is growth, but just by comparison, John F. Kennedy and I think Ronald Reagan had quarters of growth that were well above 6%. So when we talk about robust growth, often that is what they are referring to. So 2.3 or 2.1 or just above the 2% mark for yearly GDP is hardly robust growth, at least by my interpretation when you compare Reagan and Kennedy, for example, although the president and his surrogates have described it as such. Again, the technical term for economic growth is boom. And just so you know, the technical term or the layman's term for it's really not technical. The layman's term for anything above, well, it's actually technical too, because if you read about economic growth and so forth, then you're gonna learn that they refer to any economic growth as a boom and any economic contraction as bust. So if we do have an economic contraction, then the media is gonna have to start calling this a bust. And it has the same impact as boom. I don't like those terms because of that. They're very loaded terms. Anyway, to put some perspective on economic growth, we do not use employment numbers as the gold standard of growth. I can't tell you how many times I've had this discussion with people. They point to the employment numbers and they say, we've never had an economy like this. Employment numbers are highly volatile, and they do not take into account the entire economy. When they're good, you are certainly welcome to ballyhoo them as good signs, but they're only an indicator. We use gross domestic product with all of its faults as the primary indicator of economic growth. And what is GDP? It is the sum total of all output of the United States economy or an economy, including government spending for a quarter or a year. So, considering the fact that the United States government has spent almost $4 trillion in 2019 and will spend probably more than that in 2020, furthermore, considering the Federal Reserve, which is a government-regulated and chartered private bank of last resort in this country, has injected hundreds of billions of dollars, even yet maybe trillions of dollars, even in 2019 and 2020, into the U.S. banking system to keep interest rates low or to keep the banking system liquid. And despite all the so-called quote-unquote victories by this president economically through executive orders, we managed 2.1 or 2.3% economic growth. And yes, the Republican tax bill generated some growth, but it also opened a much larger tax deficit, widening the budget deficit and adding to the public debt, which is now roughly 100%+ of our GDP at about $23 trillion. And it was supposed to produce this substantial economic growth that was going to pay for the tax bill, to use a phrase, with increased economic growth and tax revenues. That did not happen. We've actually collected the most tax revenue in history, and we still have this relatively slow economic growth. But having said that, the growth attributable to the tax package passed by the Republican Congress in 2018 really did not exceed the economic growth attributable to the Obama-era economic, what was it called, the American Reinvestment and Recovery Bill, better known as the stimulus package. That's just a fact. Both of these bills are Keynesian in nature, meaning that they're designed to spend, basically, or have a budget deficit to provide a tax cut to, quote-unquote, stimulate the economy. So they are not supply side. They are not classic economics. They are they're Keynesian in philosophy. Why point that out, Bob Davis? Well, I'm going to explain in the second half of this podcast. If we can take a break from the heaviness for a second, I want to talk about improving your home. So if you've lived in a home for a while and you want to stay there, then you want to talk about potential improvements to your house, which increase the value of your home, whether it's a new kitchen, a finished basement, a man cave in the garage, and just lately, Randy Grabo at Whitetail Builders at whitetailbuildersinc.com was referring to somebody who asked him to build a sports area for their kids to play basketball and hockey and so forth in the backyard. And they're going to build this whole thing, which is really cool. This is the kind of stuff that Randy does, and he loves to do it, and he loves to talk about it. So if you're looking at making improvements to your house, if you're talking about an addition or whatever, I'm going to recommend Randy Grabo at Whitetail Builders, whitetailbuildersinc.com. You can call Randy at 612-282-8801. That's 612-282-8801. Randy loves to talk about this stuff. Whitetail is focused on detail. And the thing here is, and this is really important, if you decide to work with Whitetail, Randy will be with you every step of the way. So they are awesome. Check them out online at whitetailbuildersinc.com or click on the banner at the top of the page at the bobdavispodcasts.com. Do you hate your printer? Because if you do, it's probably because you are paying so much for print cartridges. Cartridge World in Maple Grove can save you up to to 30% compared to the big box stores, here's what you do. They will give you free delivery on qualifying orders. You can also qualify for a printer. Cartridge World is in Maple Grove, but they go metro-wide in Minneapolis and St. Paul. 763-420-6632, or click on the banner at the top of the page at thebobdavispodcast.com that says Cartridge World. Once again, we use GDP numbers as a baseline. We don't use the stock market or unemployment because I think the economic picture, both in the financial media and the political media, has been exaggerated. And I want people to understand, I'm not saying growth is not growth, but it is not above the 3 to 4% levels needed for what might be referred to as sustained economic growth that would produce the tax revenues necessary to close budget deficits and get the United States back on a stable road to real economic recovery without stimulation. And that's really important. Stimulation meaning Federal Reserve stimulation, artificially low interest rates, if that's possible, or economic interventions like quantitative easing or intervening in the overnight banking markets. What we've got here is economic growth at a level where the economy essentially needs continued insulin injections in the form of spending on infrastructure, tax cuts, lower interest rates, in or out of interventions in the banking system to maintain growth. That overall does not indicate a healthy economy, despite what the politicians say. We have now enjoyed, if you will, the longest economic expansion in U.S. history. What has fueled it has been a continued intervention by the federal government, government spending in the form of stimulus packages or tax cuts, as well as four rounds of quantitative easing from the Federal Reserve, basically injecting vast sums of money that has been created out of thin air. The Federal Reserve punches a button and creates money out of thin air, fiat currency, literally, and then they take that debt onto their balance sheet in order to keep the banking system liquid or in order to stimulate the economy to keep it from falling into a deeper recession. So what we have is a central bank that keeps interest rates low, some say artificially. The Europeans are talking about essentially 0% or negative interest rates. These are really controversial methods to, quote unquote, keep the economies afloat. Finally, we have had vast levels of government spending from Democrat and Republican presidents. So this president said he was going to balance the budget, and he said he would do it in something like 8 years. If he gets a second term, we've got these huge spending deficits of more than $1 trillion. We have a $1 trillion spending deficit now and a $4 trillion budget. If we cut the budget by 50%, we would still have a $2 trillion federal budget. This is adding to the public debt at enormous levels. So at these levels, and this is what I'm saying, and I actually think this is reasonable. I don't think it's unreasonable to suggest that at these levels, an economic shock could cause a long-awaited economic contraction or recession. So recession and growth are two normal things that happen in regulated market economies or controlled market economies or capitalist otherwise economies. You have boom and bust. It's just part of the deal. You know, weak companies are destroyed by recession so that the strong can survive. You might not agree with that philosophy, but that's kind of what we've got. And a recession technically is defined as three consecutive quarters of GDP contraction. So if the economy is in contraction on election day 2020, what does that mean politically? As I said before, the biggest problem with talking to people about politics and economy especially is they get emotional, because they immediately have this reaction where they feel they have to defend their guy, whether it's a Democrat or Republican, it doesn't matter. It's a tribal reaction to, you're criticizing my president. Well, no, I'm not saying that at all. I'm just saying that if you say so-and-so has problems in Ohio, then you're against so-and-so. That is not the case here. And I've said this often, I'm going to continue to say it, I don't care who wins the presidency. I'm not fighting for one guy or against the other or fighting for another candidate or anything else. I'm not fighting at all. What I'm doing is really observing this from what I hope to be as much of an impartial basis as I can get, considering my biases that we have too much government. But don't even get me started on that. I really don't care who the Democrats ultimately nominate to run against the president, but I do watch the political landscape closely because I think the best, and I'm going to say this again too, I think the best contribution political and social commentators and content creators about these issues can make to you is to provide you, the listener and subscriber, with information about waypoints in the process and let you think about it on your own and kind of turn it over. We've got to get past this highly partisan, tribal reaction to information, which is benign. It's not one way or another. It's, is the sun out or is it cloudy? Well, how dare you say it's cloudy? We've got to get away from that. I'm not saying the emperor has clay feet or no clothes or anything else. Here's the thing. In Ohio, Pennsylvania, Florida, Michigan, Wisconsin, and others, but those are the big ones, by voting Republican in thin margins in 2016, these states elected Donald J. Trump president because, as you know, we have 50 state elections and we have an electoral college which actually elects the president. And each state has a certain number of electoral votes. Trump managed to eke out an electoral victory. He did not win the popular vote, but of course we don't elect the president by the popular vote, right? So these are key electoral states. In these states, economy and healthcare are the number one issues. Even today, they're stable as the number one issues, unless there's a national crisis like a terrorism attack or something like that. And then you see security or defense, you know, rise to the top. But in the last two, three elections, four elections, these have been the primary issues. And so I would say that they're stable as the top issues. This is why something like coronavirus is so important, because it might shift the issues and the considerations of the key issues significantly. So in these states, as I said earlier, if you check the polls, you're going to find, depending on the week and the issue, that the Democrats are actually competitive. And remember, close races. So the president won Pennsylvania and Michigan by very, very thin margins. In fact, Pennsylvania didn't come in until about 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning in 2016, and Michigan didn't come in until the next day. So the Republicans or Democrats only have to win these states by thin margins to win the White House. Moreover, in 2018, Republican House and Senate candidates, this is really important, as well as governors, were challenged on moderate issues by Democrats of making the economy work for everyone and health insurance, and Republicans lost the majority in the House, only slightly widening their majority in the Senate. But they also lost a governorship in Virginia and most notably in Wisconsin. And Republicans lost governorships in Illinois and Wisconsin or failed to win challenges in states like Minnesota. Because of the close nature of the race in 2020, you can add Virginia, Arizona, Minnesota, and North Carolina to the list of the battleground states. Take a little time and look at the polls and look at what the number one issues are in those states. A recession, I think it's fair to say, would destroy Trump's argument that he has fixed the economy, even if it is due to something unexpected like the coronavirus knock-on effects or the shock of a slowdown related to measures to address the coronavirus. Even more, an economic recession due to the virus could politically be pinned on, and I'm putting quotes around this because I'm not saying that it is true, but pinned on quote-unquote incompetency when it comes to dealing or when it came to dealing with the problem. You're already seeing health officials criticizing Trump at this press conference earlier for trying to take a simplistic approach or anything else. I mean, I think the president is aware that this is a serious issue. There's been reports that he is really worried about it. I think putting Pence in charge of it indicates the seriousness of this and the potential for this to be a pandemic, which I have read, and I'm not, again, I'm not trying to tell you this is the gospel, but I've read a number of doctors saying that 40 to 70% of the world are going to get this disease. It's going to be an ongoing problem. So until we get over the shock of addressing it, there are going to be economic effects. Already the stock market in the United States is in correction territory. By the time you hear this podcast, I don't know which way it's going to go. Certainly it's a buying opportunity if you're a trader, but if you're watching the economy, it's hard to tell. Bond yields have been flashing offering recession signals for some time now as investors flee the stock markets for the safety of the bond market. And when they say yields are going down, it means people there's a higher demand for bonds. And so what you're seeing are people looking for quote-unquote safe haven. And at some point when the yields go down so low, they are paying for that safe haven. And that's a big issue. But there are also trade issues and wage issues, employment issues and banking issues and Federal Reserve intervention issues and regulatory issues that have been playing a role behind the scenes, because most of the time these are too complicated to be covered outside the financial press. I look at the financial press, and if you are a trader, you know what I'm talking about. These things have been sort of bubbling under that could have caused problems, and people have been talking about the chances of a recession for quite some time, all year. So this is nothing new. So now suddenly we have a shock that could actually, push. It could be the straw that breaks the camel's back, so to speak. And the truth is, sometimes recessions happen for no apparent reason. It's only later that there is a discussion about why the recession occurred based on the data and revisions, and usually nobody talks about it, especially not in politics, until after the fact. And it's the economists and the financial people and the traders who discuss those arcane issues when it comes to why a recession occurs. If you think of the economy as a force of nature or a tornado, sometimes a tornado just blows out. It finally just dissipates. In fact, it always does. That's how it ends. So saying I know that the economies go into recession or whatever is not fair. But as a force of nature, when you start to have problems with something like coronavirus, then it can have a major effect on the economy. And again, you can watch all the indicators like a hawk, and you will still be wrong. And the dollar, the price of gold, bond yields, and so on, earnings, unemployment, will not always tell you what's going on. I will tell you that former Fed head Janet Yellen said recently that the economic outlook for the United States actually looked pretty solid until the emergence of the virus. And the issue here is the world economy, which has been fairly weak, and the potential effects of a recession in Europe and China with knock-on effects in the United States. I mentioned that the central banks in Europe and Asia, Japan, and so forth, have been essentially printing money and producing what would be referred to as negative interest rates. So they also have been stimulating and intervening in their economies for quite some time. So we've got this kind of, I wouldn't say moribund, I would say anemic economy worldwide. And now if the effects begin to really hurt China's GDP and the European GDP, then you're going to see knock-on effects in the United States. Certainly will be a safe haven, but then what happens if flights start getting canceled in the U.S. and people stop taking business trips and deals aren't made because we don't know what's going to happen? These kinds of uncertainties are negative effects of the economy. So the president's position is that it's under control, and it may indeed be under control. And he says it's being exaggerated by the fake news. That may prove to be correct, and I'm not arguing with that. But what matters most is what people think is going on, not what is really going on. So if large numbers of cases start showing up in Europe and the United States, which is probably going to happen, it's going to have a negative effect on commerce. Delta recently announced it would start curtailing flights to South Korea, a major trading partner with the U.S., not to mention travel restrictions already in effect in China. Italy is now reporting clusters growing, and of course, in the United States, there's something like 50, 60 clusters, 50 and 60, 70 people affected, both in New York and also one or two people out in California. So we're starting to see cases here at this time. Technically, again, coronavirus is not as deadly as SARS, but it is more deadly than the flu, which kills thousands of people in this country, more than car accidents and any kind of violence every year. Flu is something like less than 1% deadly. This is roughly 2% deadly, and it seems to be also, interestingly enough, and I'll just mention this, and I think you should look it up, it's beginning to show the ability to mutate similar to HIV in terms of which cells it bonds with. So this is a very strange, and again, I said sinister thing that's going on here. So we really don't know where it's going to go until we get a handle on it. And the perception of people to the crisis and how the crisis is handled and the economic effects is really important when it comes to these key states. Ohio, of course, because of the industrial nature of that state, Pennsylvania, and so on. The truth is, a sustained economic contraction for any reason is going to sink the Trump presidency because it is based on marginal performance politically in those key battleground states. Doesn't matter how many stadiums that you fill with rallies in those places where people love you, it matters who votes in northern and southern Ohio, western Pennsylvania, Milwaukee, western Wisconsin, Florida, Virginia, North Carolina, and so on. So if a bunch of old people start dying in Florida and it becomes a huge issue in the state of Florida, what do you think that does to the potential vote in Florida if there's a candidate that's capable enough to turn this issue safely enough in his or her favor? So what is Election Day, November 3rd, 2020? It's going to depend on Trump's performance not being marginal in 2020. And unless he substantially improves his performance in 2020 and all the polls, and I'm going to say this, even though the polls, you know, you have to trend them and you have to look at them and you have to watch them. And that's why I'm not doing a podcast on the polling. The presidential race and the presidential matchups, doesn't matter which candidate it is, in these battleground states are very close. We're talking 47, 48, 46, 43, you know, 44, 45, very close. And nobody seems to have a real, you know, strong advantage. These elections are not won on the margins. We'll take it in terms of whether you're a Democrat or Republican, you'll take a victory if it's a 1% or less than 1% margin. But what you want are 5, 6, 7% margins, because what you want is a mandate. So if we have a repeat of 2016 with very close numbers, it's not good for Trump. And that's all I'm saying. And people should pay attention to this. Guess what? He could lose and a Democrat could win. And this was the chief reason that the media got plastered in 2016, because they said he's going to lose. He could lose. I said in 2016, early on, he could win, and the Democrats could win this election because of coronavirus. Read it and weep, or read it and rejoice, depending on which side of the fence you sit on. Remember, we have the freezing and the thawing going on that causes problems with pipes and heating systems. If this is you, if you need help with plumbing or heating, call Ryan Plumbing and Heating in St. Paul at 651-224-4771 or Minneapolis 612-927-6488. Metro-wide from St. Paul. Check them out online at ryanplumbing.com. All right. Thanks for listening to the Bob Davis Podcasts, podcast 907. You can get the podcast at iTunes right off the page at thebobdavispodcast.com. I recommend Spotify for Android devices, but if you want to use Stitcher, that's your business. It's just kind of glitchy. Tuned in, Blog Talk Radio. I also appreciate the likes and the shares and the favoriting and the following on Facebook and Twitter. And of course, thanks for your donations, Ed and Mike at thebobdavispodcast.com.